You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron alongside Wayne Fritz, and our special guest today. It's going to be a fantastic show. We have Kyle Sandler with us. Hello.
Hello. Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man, you're welcome. You're welcome. Action-packed show. So, you know, as our listeners and viewers know, that every now and again, we talk about federal prison coaching, federal prison consulting, and we talk about that as a service line, that certain coaches may offer that service line to certain consumers. And so this is a real specialty and a boutique audience here. And I know, Wayne, you're going to be, not quite the usual thing, but it'll be fun. So the reason why I wanted to bring Kyle on the show, folks, he had a real special journey with his situation. And there's been an HBO special dedicated to what got him in federal prison. We're not going to dwell so much on that today as we are about the process once he was in and how he navigated that and was able to take advantage of Trump's First Step Act that happened in 2018. Long story short, the First Step Act allows certain things to nonviolent inmates to be able to leave the prison and be out in the community earlier. Also, and maybe even satisfy the working part of their sentence earlier and then go on to probation. So we'll explain all that. And better yet, Kyle will explain that, how that worked for him. And so, so again, thanks for coming on the show.
Not a problem. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah. And what a great, you know, you're starting all over again. But kind of tell our listeners and viewers a little bit about yourself and the first leg of that journey, kind of getting into prison and some of those other things.
Well, I'm in my mid-40s, and I've had a somewhat successful career. I started some blogs that were well received. I sold one of those blogs, not for millions and millions of dollars, but for a little bit of money. And I became heavily involved in an organization that the Obama administration put together called Startup America, which was promoting startups and entrepreneurship across the country. I relocated to be with my baby's mama, the mother of my child in Alabama. And I became the entrepreneur in residence at Auburn University's business incubator. And then I wanted to start my own thing. So I started a business incubator and accelerator called The Roundhouse, and where we tried to grow startup companies. And we had a bunch of activity and a lot of startup founders that were with ties to the university and the local community as far as Atlanta come down and work with us and try and grow their companies. But we had some excitement come along the way. And then when investors started writing checks, I started using the money for things that weren't necessarily I was supposed to do. And then we had a startup that blew up nationwide. We got more checks in and I spent more money and I ended up selling 2 times the amount of equity. You know, equity is 100% pizza pie, and I sold 2 pizza pies, even though the second one didn't exist. And that was worthy of a wire fraud. Actually, it was worthy of a whole slew of charges, but I pled to an information to a wire fraud charge in 3 months in federal prison. And I started service of that sentence in 2018 now. And I was sentenced to 63 months and I got out in a combination of 2 things, but one of them was getting 365 days of First Step Act credit. And I was coming through the system right as the First Step Act was put on the congressional floor. So I stayed on top of it every single step of the way. And people that were very close to me when I was at FPC Montgomery, my friends in there and even my significant other were always teasing me saying, "Why are you taking so many classes? You're never going to get credit from the BOP for First Step Act." Well, look at me now. I'm home a year early because I took. I ended up teaching, and participating in 54 evidence-based recidivism-reducing programs or other productive activities.
Wow. That's amazing. You know, you'll hear people bitch and complain about like, oh, well, I'm at this camp and they don't really offer too much, or all we do at the camp is work and do the chow hall or do these kind of work assignments for whatever. And so I'm glad that you were able to really harness what they had available at your particular location. Now, Montgomery is a program rich, freestanding camp, military base. So you do have some good options there. And I appreciate that. I think the system appreciated it too, that you took responsibility for what you did, and you're not necessarily blaming a bad childhood or, you know, being adopted or whatever, you know what I mean? Or like, whatever.
I had both of those. I all over blame that stuff. But
Anthony Gignac and some others, you know, that, anyhow, so real quick, before we go on to that, talk about some of the misconceptions. We had a little pre-production meeting about white collar people and what their perception is. Remember that there's some of the disconnects that people have about that.
Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit, cause I was working on a blog post for my blog, for RazorWire, called there is no white collar privilege, because there's not. And, you know, friends of mine on Facebook and people that knew me before this, even before the roundhouse fraud, I was doing well. I was doing well enough to drive a Porsche and all this kind of stuff. Now I don't have two pennies to rub together. I had to do a GoFundMe. But, you know, guys like me, and I'm guilty of this. I went into prison thinking that I was the shit. You know, I had millions of dollars. You know, why on earth, and this is another misconception, and no offense to you BOP guys, but why on earth am I going to listen to somebody that isn't even good enough to get a job as a police officer or an FBI agent? They have to go work at the BOP. I mean, that's the mentality you have when you're in the BOP. And there are some great people that work there, but there are some really dumb ones too. But you come in headstrong, like you know everything. You read all these blogs and all these websites and even the news. Well, you don't know Jack unless you know the Book of Programming Statements, because that is the governing body of work for the BOP. Correct. Once you take the time to learn the programming statements, that's going to work to your advantage. So it took me about – what we call it is getting there. It took me about 6 months at FPC Montgomery to actually get there and become an inmate. And before that, it was, oh, I'm going to call my congressman. Oh, I gave Richard Shelby money. He's going to take my phone call. Basically, Richard Shelby wrote a letter back to me, told me, you know, you did what you did and you got to pay the price.
There you go.
And I did. But once you get with the program, there's a lot of things to offer. And once you get with the program, you know, a camp or a low is really nothing. It's the Bookers did a special on FPC Montgomery called Club Fed back in the 90s. That's when they had a pool. They don't have a pool anymore, but you know, it's got lush green soccer fields and a full stadium setting softball field, pickleball, tennis, a river behind there that sometimes they let us go fishing. I mean, it's like camp, really. And so, you know, once you mentally get the fact that you're in prison, you can enjoy the benefits of not being in a medium or a USP. And specifically, you know, for me, yeah, I was at grips, you know, when I allocated at court, I was at grips at what I did. I was responsible for it. But here they are throwing all these rules on me. And I'm an entrepreneurial mind and a free spirit. I don't like to be boxed in. And then, you know, you go, I did 18 months in the front in county, which is in a and thing that, you know, you realize is that they let you walk from R&D all the way up to the medical by yourself. And so I'm breathing the fresh air. I got there July 1st, 2019. It was a beautiful day outside. And they had to kick the COs had to kick me off the yard at 9:45 at recall because I had been enjoying the outside so much. But, you know, I'll give you a great example. I was telling you earlier. For some reason, my PSI was incorrect. I do have a college degree, but PSI, it said I had the college degree. It did not say I graduated high school. So the supervisor of education at FPC Montgomery told me that I was going to have to take the GED class. And to any normal sane person, this sounds absolutely ridiculous.
Right.
And, you know, I called my mom and I started bitching, and she called and she wrote a scathing letter to the supervisor of education when she sent back my transcript, diploma. the SOE was butt hurt until the day I left. Right. And I didn't leave from Montgomery. I caught a phone shot on September 21st and did the last part of my sentence at FCI Forest City in Arkansas, which took me behind the fence, and it was a whole different experience. And then, you know, the not having white collar privilege came into everybody telling me every 15 minutes, well, you're not in camp anymore. But all in all, it's the same kind of thing. When you get with the program and work the program, it sucks to not be home or with your family.
So you didn't even have a year of clear conduct when you got
my first time?
You had that 108. Was it a 108 shot on the phone?
Yeah. No, I had a 108, or maybe it was 199, but most likely 108.
A 100 series. Wow.
A 100 series shot. I don't know. Remember this put out that any camper that received a 100 series shot was going to get a variable and go to a low. Right. So I got a 100 series shot and I went to a low.
Okay. Wow. And you were only there for 7 weeks?
7 weeks. I arrived there on November 23rd and I left February 16th.
Wow. And did they tell you why they pushed you out so quick?
Well, I had two things happen. So backing up to 2 weeks ago today, back up the week before that. So 3 weeks ago on a Tuesday was my case manager's late night. He called me to the office. He said, Grand Prairie recalculated everybody with a 23 out date for first step back. You got 365 days. Now, my original out date was 120-124. So I was content, happy, crying because I was going to go home this year. And, you know, with the halfway house, and I was not going to the house. But then on Valentine's Day, they woke me up at 5:30 in the morning and told me I had to get to the unit team office immediately. And I thought I was in trouble for something, but they would have sent me to the lieutenant's office. So after the initial shock, the unit secretary says, you got anybody at home that can pick you up? I'm like, pick me up when? Like in July? No, right now. I said, no, I don't have anybody that can pick me up. And I said, what's going on? The case manager and the CMC come and they told me that I had received immediate release and they had 48 hours to get me off the compound. Concurrently with all this First Step Act business, my significant other left prison in August and I've been trying to get home to him ever since. So I've been throwing all kinds of motions at the wall. That's another thing I got in prison. I got my Blackstone paralegal certification, and I've been doing a lot of motions, a lot of jailhouse lawyering, as you put it. But I wrote a motion for motion, got sentenced in the feds first, and you can directly link your case, your state case to your federal case. Then you can, if it's up to the federal judge, but he can elect to post-sentencing, run it concurrent retroactive. And I had a bad check charge in the state, which was a part of my roundhouse scheme, but might not be construed as that. However, the DA at the time, who's actually in prison now himself, had gone all over the media saying that he's going to bring Kyle Sandler back to face federal charges. I'm just, you know, in the newspaper says, we're just picking him up. The feds are going to take over. So if that's not a link, I don't know what is. So I took all those articles. I sent them in with my motion. I found out the day after I left, I actually sent it to you, that the judge approved my motion, which was the other part of how I got to go home so early. So not only did I get a year of First Step Back time, I got my retro 13-month release. I mean, I'm at the halfway house because I don't have a home to go to, but I'm not in pre-release or anything like that. I'm essentially a free man except for the supervised release.
Okay. So congrats.
Coincidentally, I don't know if Wayne even knows the story. It was a Saturday. 2 weeks ago, Saturday, and I was talking to Bruce on the phone, and I say, Bruce, I'm all the way out. And he looks at BOP and he says, well, it says you're unknown in that RRM Montgomery. And I freaked out. I thought they were coming back to get me. And, you know, Bruce is really good at what he does. And he called some people to make sure that I was all the way out. And he was able to confirm with me on a Sunday that, yes, I am all the way out and I can sleep now.
Yeah, you've really had a lucky star on you on this last part, because that Sunday, I believe the Monday is a federal holiday.
It was a holiday. It was President's Day.
That is one of my compadres, let's say. Anyway, I was able to call that individual at their home and say, hey, you know, I know I've seen this when, you know, they load a guy. He was released on Valentine's or whatever, but then they they go back to that status as unknown because they're trying to figure stuff out. You know what I mean? Sometimes I said, man, can we take a look at this guy and see, because the bureaus made mistakes the other way, Kyle. They've double dipped. The guy got a 3621E, got a year off his sentence just because of the RDAP. And then they gave him another year plus for credit. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, there are some people that they let out way early at first because it was a flurry. So actually the Bureau of Prisons makes mistakes in both directions. They don't necessarily hold people into prison longer, but sometimes set people up for sure. We're able to verify with your particular case that it's fine. As a matter of fact, have you checked your date in the locator to see if it changed back?
It still says the same thing.
Unknown.
But the other person that's public law, it still says the same thing. Right. And the way that the halfway house explained it to me is that I'm not in the BOP's custody, but I'm in the facility that has a BOP contract.
That's right.
And if I were to burn in a fire and die, I have to be somewhere, so I'm here.
Well, and you still have, and boy, for our people that are going to listen to this show later on, you still have a good conduct time date release that's floating out there. I mean, that GCT date is still there. It will always be there. You're just in the community sooner, okay? And so because of the First Step Act, you're able to be in community placement sooner. And so you're that special, like as you saw. And Wayne, so he's immediate release, and they don't want him to be homeless, so he can go to a federal halfway house and stay there to get on his feet under a public law placement. Okay, that's one flavor of public law placement. The other flavor of public law placement, let's say there's another guy there and he got in trouble, he's on CARES Act release with a 2026 release date, and he got in trouble. And I have a case right now of a lady who had a 2026 release date, CARES Act, and she loaded money on another lady's books in the joint. 300 series shot. Guess what? Back to the slammer she goes. You know what I mean? But the PO sent her back to public law. Public law reenacted. They did a DHO. She's guilty and she's back. And that's the more punitive flavor. But you're on the good flavor of being there because the Department of Justice is paying that contract for you to be there. And they're doing it with a smile, but that's why your categorization changed just a little bit. Now, once you move out of that place and you transfer to a residence, then you're released on such and such a date. We'll come back.
Yeah, my PO, we're actively looking for a place to go. She told me, like, you know, once I have an address I can go to, it'll take her 3 or 4 days to finish it, to do everything. So, right. You know, I can stay here as long as 6 months. I could leave here at the end of the week if I have all my ducks in a row. But yes. I won't have them this week. But and, you know, as far as God being on my side, I'll tell you, I don't think I told you this story yet, but maybe I did. They got me in transit from Montgomery, Alabama to Forest City, Arkansas in 26 hours. And I have never heard of that before. So my entire Forest City experience has been like, I could imagine.
And now just there's a crunch on bed space in those lows, not so much camps or penitentiaries, but now all these guys are scoring down, they're getting the points in it, and the lows are very much burdened, you know. And so there's two things. One, you earned it. So make no mistake about it. You earned it, hands down. But the other thing is that there are population pressures in the system to clear as many of those low beds as possible.
The bottleneck comes from the SOs and the fact that the SOs can't go to camp. I mean, that's what's clogging up the system at the low.
Right. And there's a lot of illegal aliens that can't go to a camp too. Their deportation status isn't clear. And so if it looks like they might not get deported, they're going to go to a low or a medium. But that's another kettle of fish. We don't want to burn the show on illegal aliens. But what would you recommend to family members or inmates that may be seeing this on the low or whatever? What would you recommend to them as they're doing their time?
There's a whole lot of things to recommend. First off, take any and every program. You know, I was only in the system for about 4 years, but I learned it very well. And, you know, the BOP has notoriously gone against the inmates. This time, with the First Step Act, the Justice Department basically said that they were going to do it almost to the letter of the way the law was written.
That was all
published in the Federal Register back in January. And so what that means is basically any class that you take is considered programming. I remember all this traffic and talk back in 2018, that basically equated to this. Congress doesn't want you to sit in the bed, in the cube, or in the cell all day and do nothing. As long as you're doing something and not getting in trouble, then you're going to earn these First Step Act credits. And that can be taking a class, holding a job. There's even some sports programs, some arts and crafts type programs, all the recreation programs. As long as you're doing something, it's pretty much covered by the First Step Act. You know, for me, I had a job my entire bid as the OM cook. That's the cook that cooks for the staff. And I did that my entire time at Montgomery. I took every single class that there was, from parenting 1 and 2 to business planning, all that stuff.
Now,
and it all counted for something.
It all counted
for when you said you were the cook.
What'd you say?
So you cooked for the staff. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean it's a great hustle too. But yeah,
that's
so,
what I mean. Because
you know, the OM cook gets access to all the great food. But it helped to build a rapport with the staff. I mean, there's another misconception about First Step Act and shots. I don't know if this is going to change down the road. And for those of you who haven't been in the system yet, a shot is an incident report. But there's a misconception that shots are going to jack up your first step time, and it might down the road. But personally, I had 7 shots. I had 6 smoking 300s in the 100, and I still got out 365 days early.
Also, how many days do you get for being in a camp? Do you remember? Do you think you got extra ETC for just being in a camp in a minimum?
Yeah, but I don't know exactly what the figure was, but yeah, there is camp. There's something called camp points.
Yeah, right. There were camp points, and so I didn't know if you knew that specifically. I'm still kind of hunting for that. I know that some of the guys work in Unicor factories and some of the other places, and they're getting industrial good time. I don't know what the hell that is, but sounds like it's just a nice sounding name for earning stuff while you're in Unicor, which is very meaningful because you're in a factory. So so now you're out and you're in basically the same as a federal halfway house. You're in a federal halfway house.
I'm in a federal halfway house. I've had a beat to my own drum, but yeah.
Yeah, but this is good because a lot of our listeners are getting you tips about how to asking for things. How do you navigate through the halfway house staff, because they're not BOP staff. I mean, these are private contractors. And so there's a difference between, I think, dealing with those BOP folks. So talk about it if you can.
So I'm at a Dismas Charities halfway house, and I think Dismas is the biggest contractor for halfway houses in the country for the feds. And I'm going to tell you, the staff here is unbelievably nice. They're extremely respectful. They all call us Mr. by our last names. They ask us how we're doing. Can they do anything for us? It's the same deal as the BOP. If you follow the directions, you're not going to have any problems. Just about everybody in the halfway house is in the same position as you. They don't want to get in trouble. They want to go home. So it's not a big fighting atmosphere. You don't have to wear your boots in the shower anymore. And you can use the cell phone and smoke cigarettes. But more importantly, the halfway house offers a lot of programs. Because of my public law status, I'm not in their pre-release program. But right now, the guys that aren't at work, they're all in a class right now. It's either some kind of employment class or some kind of life skills class. And, Dismas has been on basic lockdown for COVID for 2 years, and they're lifting it tomorrow. So passes are going to be reinstituted. We can order out food on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The places climate controlled. There's no, I'm talking to you from the cafeteria, you know, I'm not trying to get that white collar privilege back, but I'm not like a lot of other folks that have been in here. For instance, all these guys are going out to the Hyundai plant, fast restaurants for jobs. I had 12 Zoom interviews. So every time I have a Zoom interview, I just tell the staff and they like, let me go into a room that has nobody. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm in the cafeteria. Don't call the chow hall. mentally, you know, we're called residents instead of inmates. We're supposed to address each other by Mr. and our last names. And it's the guys here are incredible. Actually, this is a co-ed facility. So there's some girls here too. They're all just incredibly nice and accommodating. We help each other do chores and stuff like that. You know, we got to do chores 3 times a day, but you got to do that stuff at home. And though for in the pre-release program, you get 3 social passes a month for 3 hours a time. And then you go progressive home passes. So the first one's going to be 12 hours. The next one's going to be 24. The next one's going to be 48. And then you're going to get 48 hour passes all the way up until your PO says you can go home. And then you can take 3 hours a day to go job hunting. But job there when you can just eat. And that works here at this facility, her name is Miss Davis. But every dismissed facility has this. It is her job to help you find a job.
Right. It's a job developer. She's the job developer.
She loves doing this. So she checks in with each of us. You know, if we need help, she'll look at resumes and kind of as a joke because it's my sense of humor, but Indeed recommended you go into Indeed and I've done 300 job applications. And the other day I got this, you know, you've been invited to apply for resident manager at Dismissed Charities. I was like, what? So I applied for the job and in the cover letter I wrote, you know, I just want Miss Davis to take a look at this to see how I present on Indeed. And, you know, after I did it, she wasn't mad that I did that. And she spent a little bit of time with me telling me, you know, pointers as to how I could better present myself on Indeed. So the counselors here and the job lady, they're very committed to our program. You're good. But if you start bucking the program, then you're going to be treated like an inmate and taken to the county jail.
I got a quick question. It's because I'm so impressed that Kyle, I mean, really just your mannerism, just your attitude. And heck man, you're a good guy. You'd be a guy I'd want to know. I'd be a friend.
Well, you do know him.
But yeah, I do know him now. That's right. But matter of fact, I took a picture, so I got your.
That's my Twitter.
I can get hold of you then. But anyway, so what are your? Because you have so much experience before you spent time in the house,
but right in the clinic.
Yeah, but installing 13. But when now that you've got all these job interviews and all this, but really, 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 as Kyle Sandler, where do you want to be in your career or a career? What career? Like in 3 to 5 years?
Well, that's a really good question. First off, I'm really just doing the job applying thing to satisfy the program. I have we're in the middle of transferring me to Florida, so I can be with my significant other and we can start over together. But in prison was an eye-opening experience, and guess might go back to white-collar privilege and whatnot. And I'll tell you, and I'll be the first. And I told people that I was locked up with when I was affluent and I had money and I was the on the board of the Boys and Girls Clubs and all this stuff. I was giving political donations to Richard Shelby and other political figures in my area. And I would have pulled my money if I thought that they were spending it on prison. Before I got in any trouble, prisoners and inmates were in prison because they deserved to be there. Wow. You know, people that go to prison are guilty. I have learned that everybody in prison is innocent. At least they think they are to some degree. But in actuality, a lot of us are guilty, but they might not necessarily need to be there as long as they are. And you really don't realize how the system is until you're in it. And unfortunately, call it COVID, call whatever it is right now, the BOP is in a very, very critical employee shortage. And it's reflective in the fact that you know, you have people that were hired to be teachers, have to be COs and work units and stuff like that. So programming is disrupted because they have a staffing shortage. But the going back to what I was saying is, I participated and taught a bunch of classes. I started teaching business development, business planning, and entrepreneurship. And one thing that I started to realize is that, well, two things. The first one is that drug dealers are inherently entrepreneurs. The only thing different between Steve Jobs and the biggest drug pin in the country is the fact that the biggest drug pin in the country sells an addictive illegal substance, and Steve Jobs sells iPhones. Well, he's dead, but Apple sells iPhones. The skill set that you need to sell drugs is the same as selling iPhones or creating a good company. And, you know, I don't know what your background is, Wayne, but as far as me and Bruce go with this experience in the BOP, no drug dealer, to my knowledge, was a sex shop the first day. Never happened. Most of your federal drug dealers have been doing it for a really long time, and somebody told on them. So I take these guys that already have a entrepreneurial mindset, and I get them thinking about other stuff. What could you do? What have you always wanted to do as far as a business goes? Well, I want to make money. So I'll give you the really good example of Cardarius Wilkerson. He's a guy in Memphis, Tennessee, a big time drug dealer. I met him at camp. He wanted to start a food truck. He had researched that in Shelby County, you can sell day old food as long as you identify it as day old food. So his idea was to go to all the restaurants on Beale Street and buy them out at the end of the night, whatever they got left over, and then sell it the next day for, you know, half of what it cost or a quarter of what it cost at the store or at the restaurant. And so now his Beale on Wheels cart food truck is going to make about $1 million this year. Oh. And this guy was a dough. I started to see that, you know, and, you know, I did time with Kevin Trudeau, Nevin Shapiro, you know, Jeff Skilling was going out as I was coming in. So all these big high profile guys, and, you know, we used to have clubs on Saturday and meet and talk about ideas and stuff. And I took it to the next level. We started taking the business plans and using a cell phone to find people that, you know, had experience like ours, you know, big time, successful entrepreneurs that may have had some kind of trouble in their lives. The perfect example is Andy Wiedenhorn, who's the CEO and founder of Fatburger. He did a seven years on a 10 for a white collar charge. We reached out to him and said, "Hey, can you look at these business plans?" "Sure." So, you know, we're getting these guys that to look at the business plans, offer advice. You know, we have somebody, a very high profile, to put some of these business plans from inmates from St. Louis. He, without saying names, he created the app that all the inmates use and people on the street use to transfer money. And the inmates got a kick out of that, and he gave some feedback. He sent letters back to them saying, "Hey, you might want to try this and this and this." I want to take it to the next level. I'm not going to raise money because I don't have any restrictions in my sentencing, but I'm just never going to raise money again. But what I'm going to do, and what the company Razor Wire Media is going to do, is cultivate the entrepreneur and help them create a business plan and their product plans and their wireframes, and then help them take this idea to an investor that's already familiar with their criminal background. And, you know, they say 70 million Americans have a conviction of some kind in their record, which deters them from working full time. And, you know, 1 in 3 people are turned away because of an arrest record. At the end of the day, the numbers, because if you can't get a job, eventually you're going to go back to doing crime. So if you can't do a job, then, you know, maybe you can start a business. The other part of that is, if you're a drug dealer, you're used to carrying $10,000, $15,000 in cash to the club on the weekend, making $15 an hour at McDonald's just isn't going to cut it for you. I mean, the normal American people want to say, "Well, suck it up and live the way that I live." And I would love to do that, but just some people have it in their mind that they can't because they've already lived a certain way. So instead of trying to sell drugs, if you have a business idea, then cultivate it, and you might be able to make the exact same money. And the difference between that and the drugs is that the government can't take the money away except for taxes. And so that's the ethos of what I want to do next. It's called Razor Wire Media. We launched it from prison, and we were using a guy that I used to co-found blogs with as the shill guy, because all of us were in prison. They kicked me out of work. Thank you very much.
Man alive, I mean, I'm just, I'm impressed. Bruce, I wish this show was about a couple of hours. We got to have this guy back.
Oh, yeah, man. I told him. Yeah, I definitely told him. You know, we want to have him back in a few months because he's everybody has a journey. You know what I mean? Like, okay, this is where I was when I was in Dismas. This is where I am now, my first residential free world placement. This is where I'm at now. And you get to kind of catalog that. I encouraged him to have a journal.
I
just writing down these experiences because something like this, it'll be, he's already been on HBO. This will have value for Netflix, other production companies.
They've already talked to me too. I mean, we're talking to them right now.
And of course, Bruce has a supporting role here in those.
But the real deal is, you know, my background is sales. I mean, I've directed and do demonstrations. So I've done that for 50 years.
Right.
What I hear from you, this is where I put it in my head, is, you know, it's the old saying in our business that it's not how many times you get knocked down that counts. It's how many times do you get back up.
Right.
Exactly. I always say, you know, my come-ups are always bigger than my setbacks. It's funny that you said that about sales. One of my Indeed jobs was at the big Mercedes dealership here. I applied in Indeed. And the guy called me back and said, you know what? If you can raise $2 million in Opelika, you can sell anything. So I'm going to go interview at the Mercedes dealership. I'm probably not going to take the job, but I have it in my brain. That's what I did, raising money, selling, you know, in my background, I had started a really successful DJ business at one time, selling party packages. And, you know, and when I was a blogger, the way I made my money was I started the Droid Guy, which was the very first ever Android blog in the world. And I was selling advertising, and I refused to go network because my background before that was in radio, and I'm familiar with the whole national thing. So I was selling my advertising direct and demanding a much bigger price. But, you know, I'm a salesman, and, you know, I want to share that with everybody.
Well, that's the deal. That's where it comes to, Bruce. I think that's where it comes to our coaching show, because you're going to coach a lot of people.
Right.
You're going to have, you know, we all have a choice on what kind of effect we're going to have on people. But I'm going to tell you something, Kyle. You're going to have an effect on people that you're going to change lives.
But yeah, and he can. I just don't want Kyle to go down the same road that some of these other guys did, you know, because I had Pete Rose, Marion Barry, Manuel Noriega. I mean, I got Gleason, who was my guy out of Enron and whatnot. So
Bernie Ebert would have been one of yours too, right?
So, I mean, Michael Vick, all these. So, I mean, I've seen so many of these guys sound just like Kyle when they're first out, but then they get corrupted again. So that's why I'm trying to get a hold of Kyle early in his journey, and have that regular contact. And I know, Kyle, you're probably saying to yourself, you know, screw you, how dare you say that? No. But you know what I mean? These are the
it's the statistics. I mean, I've been really big in the media, and
that's true.
Some of that worked to my advantage and some of it didn't. And I knew it was coming. I thought it was going to be like the day I got released, but last week the articles started appearing on the internet that I had gotten released from prison, and people are sharing the articles on Facebook, and they're burning and all this. He shouldn't be able to get out of prison until he pays me my money back. Well, dude, I got to get out of prison to pay your money back. But rather than that, you know, one of the things that NRDAP taught me was about humility. And, you know, I did what I did. I'm paying the price. And the other part is watch and see. I can't tell you this tomorrow, today, and you see a change tomorrow. No, this is I'm in this for the long haul. I want us to be able to have I want us to be able to be on the show next year at this time and say, see, this is what Kyle did.
Exactly. You know,
I kind of hit the road. I mean, I kind of ran into a wall here, because like when we were first talking, I mean, I think I talked to you the day I got out, but in the few days after that, I'm public law, my sentence is all the way over, I'm all the way out, you know, why the F am I have to be here and listen to these stupid rules? I'm calling everybody in the chain of command, you know, I'm calling my probation officer and her page motion to drop off at the court. I didn't take it yet. But, you know, the other side of me is my boyfriend didn't expect me to be home for 2 years. So, you know, all of this is bonus time. So he told me, put on the brakes, and just, you know, enjoy this partial freedom that you got, because essentially you're free. Like tomorrow, you know, I've got 3 interviews scheduled with, you know, different types of jobs. So essentially I get to stay out of the halfway house all day long. Right. I can feed myself. I can stop by the store. So I have freedom, but it's, and the tough part for me is like, had Valentine's Day not happened, tomorrow I'd be waking up at 5:30 and going to Mainline. Right. So,
but I'm
grateful.
But you, right. But at the same time, you're still in a public law placement. You still have to come home, right, for curfew or whatever. You still have to submit to some rules and regulations. And
I did a UA
in the chow hall. You're not in your living room. And so you're still under duress a little bit. You know what I mean?
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit, but it's enough. And so that's the human experiment that you know, I want to hopefully see you conquer and come through the other side of that. So when you have complete freedom, right? Complete freedom. I mean, yeah, you'll be doing your USPO supervision, but I'm going to call that complete freedom, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But then you know, be really watchful and mindful of the choices you make. And I'm sure, you know, you're going to do well. I hope you do well. I feel sure that you will, because you've really kind of approached this the right way. It's just that you don't want to make a spontaneous decision or a spurious decision or whatever that could lead to a bad choice. But anyway, yeah, man. So we got about 6 minutes left.
Let me say one thing.
Yeah.
And I can jump in, because, Con, I'll tell you what, in just this short amount of time, I got to tell you something. It's an old boy. We don't know each other, but I'll tell you, I'm sure proud of you.
Thank you very much.
I'm proud of people like you. And I'll tell you what, buddy, I'll be praying for you and cheering you on, that you won't even know about it, but I'm going to be out there. Because you really are, you're the kind of guy that I'd like in my circle of friends, because you're motivated, you're positive, you actually have all the stuff to help change so many people's lives for the good. You got it.
Thank you very much.
An old boy told me years ago, said, you've got the world in a jug and the stopper in your hand. You can do anything you want. I really am. Actually, I'm proud of the hustle you did to got you in there, because it was hustle.
I've always been a hustle, and I hustled to get out too. I took every single one of those classes.
You did.
I told every single person, including my boyfriend at the time, no, we're not going to go hang out. I got to go to this class. You know, they were, you're so stupid, they're never going to give you the credit. Well, they did. And, you know, he got out on CARES Act, you know, in August, but he still has 2 years left on the monitor. And me, I'm all the way out. So I'm actually on supervised release right now. So if I stay here 6 months, I only have 2.5 years left of supervised release.
Right.
But the truly humble thing about this is the videos on the internet, and the video is part of my HBO thing. You know, I was I went to this car dealership in Texas, $102,000, $4,000 worth of clothes and a Breitling watch and a $2,000 pair of shoes when I got arrested on June 20th, 2018. And I got nothing left. My baby's mama left me. They won't have nothing to do with me. I got a mean email the day I got out saying, I gave all your stuff away. So I've got no stuff. Yeah, I had started a GoFundMe, and my probation officer asked me if I could make it private, because people were starting to say stuff. You know, they can't stop me, but you know, I've got, you know, I got like $10 left on my BOP card from my whatever you call it, the money they give you when you leave.
Right. Your release gratuity.
You're right. And here's the real messed up part was, not messed up because I'll take the freedom any day, but because of the way the events transpired, I didn't even get to call anybody and say, hey, throw some money on my book so I can get it on the debit card before I leave.
Right.
By the time I left the unit team office, I was already out of the TrueLink. I was already out of the trust fund system.
Right.
I couldn't make phone calls, period. So I left, you know, I left with like $100. I bought a $30 cell phone that I'm talking to you guys on now. And, you know, some friends of mine have sent me sweatpants and shorts. But, you know, I didn't realize that I lost. I mean, I knew I lost 70 pounds, but I didn't realize how thin my waist had gotten.
Actually, you do but, look, your face does look thinner than the.
Oh yeah. I lost 70 pounds.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other thing before we, I know we're running out of time, but I'm the kind of guy, like, I needed, as crazy as this sounds, I recognize the fact that I needed to do this. I needed to hit the wall. I needed to go to prison. If I hadn't gone to prison when I was 42, I would have gone to prison at 52. If I hadn't stolen 2 million, I would have stolen 150 million and I'd have been locked up for the rest of my life. So this was a wake up call for me. And there's no way to tell my sincerity because I'm so good at what I do. So you just got to watch me. And I want the world to watch and see that I'm sincere and, you know, along the way and make something myself.
Appreciate you. Proud of you.
Excellent, man.
Thank you.
And real quick before we close, Kyle, how can folks get a hold of you? How can they reach you?
I put my Twitter on the little thing there like they do on Fox News. So I'm at the Kyle Sandler on Twitter or at Razorwire Media, at Razorwire Media One on Twitter. The website for Razorwire is razorwiremedia.com. And I'm very heavily, very heavy participant in the FSA group on Facebook. Yes. And like, there's a lot of groups that are talking about it. Note that you dive with me, watching this and you got a loved one that's about to go into the system. You want to just search in Facebook FSA. You'll see the group we're talking about. And Bruce or me or any of the other guys that have done this will be able to help you. You know, I worked on my paralegal from the day I got in. I got it in 21. The whole step of the way, I did 47 motions. I got 11 people out of prison, 12 including myself on the non-proton, which is unbelievable odds.
And we'll see if the judge wrote an opinion on that. We'll try to research that.
Yeah. Well, we got the letter. I just want to know if there was an opinion.
Right.
I'd love to see that.
Exactly. All right, folks. Well, that's another fantastic show here on the LA Talk Radio's Concierge Coaches Show. Thanks to our special guest, Kyle Sandler, for coming in today. Kyle, thanks again for coming in.
Thank you.
Folks, you can see us at concierge_coaches on Instagram, Concierge Coaches Show on Facebook. I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. And Wayne, how can folks?
Wayne@yahoo.com.
There it is.
Wow. Yahoo.
Yeah, man.
Hold time. Up,
baby. So y'all, everybody have a great day. Hopefully we'll see Kyle again here in a few months. And everybody have a great week and come see us next week. We got a great special guest coming in next week. Travis Luter, MMA and UFC trainer. It's going to be a fun show. So see us next week. We'll talk to y'all later. Take care. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.